Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and the rest of the region this Tuesday, January 21st, 2025. Sudanese refugees staying in Malakal Transit Center say loved ones died along their journey to South Sudan.
I pray to God so that those who have remained can come here. This place is safe for us, but we are now worried about those who have remained when we left.
And women in Western Equatoria State are breaking traditional gender barriers.
Women are laying bricks, women are cultivating, even others are doing painting, others are drivers. We are not really depending on men.
These stories and more are coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some Sudanese refugees at Bulacat Transit Center in Malakal say they have lost family members on their way to South Sudan. The refugees also have lost contact with other relatives in Sudan and are worried about them. Mamer Abraham Kwat reports from Malakal.
UN OCHA estimated by late December that more than 900,000 Sudanese had arrived in South Sudan. It says 337,000 more arrivals are expected in South Sudan this year. The task force for the reception of refugees and returnees at Bulacat Transit Center in Malakal, Upper Nile State, confirms that now more Sudanese refugees are arriving than South Sudanese. 38-year-old Amna Darema is a mother of six who arrived from Sudan last month.
I pray to God so that those who have remained can come here. This place is safe for us, but we are now worried about those who have remained when we left. Aerial bombardment killed many people among us and we left everything. We are safe here, but we request support for the civilians left in Sudan to be brought to South Sudan.
29-year-old Gisma Ibrahim says she lost a father on their way to South Sudan, and fighters with the paramilitary rapid support forces took their belongings.
We came from southern Kordofan, Al Obeid. We got RSF on the way. They took everything from us, and we came here without anything. My father was killed on the way. We came to Reng and later came here. We have a family in Khartoum, Orduman. I left my elder brother with his sons and other siblings also, and I do not talk to them because there is no network.
32-year-old Nasaruddin said a father of two children has no hope there will be peace in Sudan soon.
This war is serious, and I do not think it will end soon. I urge warring parties to put down their gun and care about the lives of vulnerable civilians. We want Sudan to return to stability. I urge the international community to try by all means to stop this war.
UN OCHA says most Sudanese refugees arrive suffering physical and psychological trauma, with many of them victims of abuse from fighters and gender-based violence. Mai Kong is the chairperson of subcommittee for the reception of refugees and returnees at Bulacat Transit Center in Malakal.
They have seen a lot of things on their way coming before they cross the border of southern Sudan. And even there's some women who are complaining there's a lot of raping, all this kind of gender-based violence they are committed in Sudan. And this made them to get trauma. And now we have some organizations who are working in help. They are engaging them, counseling.
He says refugees are given food for only 7 days at the transit center. He urges the United Nations not to keep them waiting for more than a week at the camp.
UN need to have resources that they can not keep them delaying at the transit center. Because here in transit center, the World Food Program is giving only 7 day assistance. If any beneficiary stay for long or for more than 7 days, there's a suffering there.
Mai says his group has transported 13,770 refugees to other refugee camps in South Sudan and still hosts about 1,000 refugees at the transit center. The war in Sudan started in April 2023 between the paramilitary rapid support forces and Sudan armed forces. According to the United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, the war has displaced more than 8 million Sudanese. The UN says an estimated 25 million Sudanese, nearly a half of Sudan's population, needs humanitarian assistance and protection. For VOA News, I am Amer Ibrahim Kwod, reporting from the Upper Nile State's capital, Malakal.
Many women in Western Equatoria State are breaking traditional gender roles and have learned brickmaking in order to support their families and reduce their dependence on their husbands. Matia Samuel Timatio has the story for VOA from Yambio.
Mary Peter Pio is the chair of Western Equatoria State's Women Empowerment Center. She says women in the state can do any kind of work, and many have turned to brickmaking to earn a living, a job traditionally held by men.
Women in Western Equatoria, they are trying their best. It's not only that, only men can do whatever work which God created them to do. Women can also do better. Women are laying bricks, women are cultivating, even others are doing painting, others are drivers. We are not really depending on men.
31-year-old Viola Rafael is among the local women who make bricks for sale.
The first time I sold bricks, I used the money to buy a plot of land. This work has helped me a lot. I plan to sell this brick and use the money to register my children in school. My advice to other women is to stop sitting idle and waiting for help. No one taught me how to do this. Women should stand strong and take action.
Cecilia Francis is a mother of two and has been making bricks for over 3 years.
I started laying bricks because I did not want to depend on my husband for everything. I laid 30,000 bricks in my first attempt and I sold them. This time I have already laid 25,000 and I am still making more. My husband does not work, so I take full responsibility for supporting the family. I want to advise women to stop relying on men for everything. Try your best to contribute, and when both partners work together, it makes life easier for the family.
Elias Martin is a young brickmaker who advises his peers to take up the trade and not just to try to get office jobs.
So my appeal to other youth is you should not just put much of your effort or on your focus that you need to be employed, to be working in the government, maybe in the NGOs. You also need to at least try this work of which others are doing by hands, you see, like laying the bricks, like working in the garden for people. These are the things which really generate income and time. So women should not over depend on their husbands, you know. Once a woman is being involved in doing such things, their family will have no problem.
The government of South Sudan set a 35% affirmative action quota for women in all transitional governmental institutions in the 2018 revitalized peace agreement. However, female leaders and activists in South Sudan say women and children are most vulnerable to prolonged conflict, insecurity, and climate change. In addition, there are high levels of gender-based violence reported across the country. For VOA News, I am Matthias Samuel Timatio, reporting from Western Equatoria State capital, Yambio.
Rescuers say 16 Sudanese civilians were killed and 18 others injured when paramilitary forces shelled a displacement camp battling famine in El Fasher, the besieged capital of North Darfur. The Rapid Support Forces, which have been at war with the regular army since April of 2023, shelled a market in Abu Shuk displacement camp, according to the area's emergency response room, part of a network of volunteer rescuers across Sudan. In December, a UN-backed Integrated Food Security Phase classification review found that famine had taken hold at three displacement camps in North Darfur, including Abu Shuk, as well as affected residents and displaced communities in the Nuba Mountains of southern Kordofan. Famine had earlier been declared in Zamzam, another displacement camp in North Darfur's El Fasher. El Fasher is home to some 2 million people who have been under the RSF siege since May. It has seen some of the worst fighting of the war as the army battles to keep its last foothold in the vast Darfur region of Western Sudan. Nearly all of Darfur is now controlled by the RSF. Amnesty International has accused the DRC's army and a rebel group of bombing densely populated areas in attacks that likely constitute war crimes, according to Amnesty. The rights group said the DRC armed forces and the M23 rebel group fired unguided rockets and other explosives into densely populated areas in eastern DRC more than 150 times between January and July of last year. The Associated Press reports that the attacks killed more than 100 civilians and wounded hundreds of others. The rights group's report comes at a time of increased fighting between the Congolese army and several rebel groups in the east of the country. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
Listener of South Sudan in Focus, we have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Monday was a long day here in Washington, filled with pomp and ceremony and tradition, and some out of the ordinary events, as Donald Trump was sworn in as the 47th President of the United States. VOA senior Washington correspondent Carolyn Pursuti has more.
The golden age of America is coming. $10.
Inauguration 2025, making history for many reasons.
It's bone-chilling cold, man. I can't.
Minus 11 degrees Celsius, forcing the inauguration inside the Capitol Rotunda, where 600 could see it live. Thousands more stood on the National Mall.
Let us remember.
Watching the oaths on their phones and seeing government change.
I think not being in the minority of opinion as far as politically, it feels good to be able to say, yes, we're bringing back things that make sense.
Tim Wasson is thinking ahead for Vice President J.D. Vance.
Everything I've read and everything I believe in my heart believes 4 years from right now, he'll be our next president.
Andrew Dinoon brought his whole family here, despite voting independent all his life.
I voted both sides of the aisle. Libertarian a lot, you know, but a lot of the policies and things that Trump speaks about kind of endears us, you know, as a family.
It's a good time for us to start having discussions in our house about, I don't want to enforce my beliefs on my children, but I want to explain to them why I feel maybe more conservative on this aspect or why I feel more liberal on that aspect.
Since their marching in the parade was canceled, this choir from Louisiana roved around the capital city. With the flurry of changes in plans on Friday, one thing didn't change. Security. 25,000 police officers are in town, and nearly all of the 48 kilometers of fencing still stands.
Back the other way.
Supporters crowded closed checkpoints at the arena where President Donald Trump was to speak to a crowd of 20,000. Many of them had left behind backpacks and purses to be allowed in.
It doesn't matter, you know, Trump's the president now, so everything's all right.
I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear.
The first indoor inauguration in 40 years. More security than any inauguration. Donald Trump, a president serving non-consecutive terms. And at 78, he is the oldest president. All now inauguration history. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News.
Nigeria's emergency agency says the death toll from a weekend gasoline tanker explosion in north central Niger state has risen to 86. Explosions that killed dozens who converge on the crashed tanker trucks to scoop up spilled fuel have been common for years in Nigeria, and the problem is only becoming worse, as we hear from Timothy Obiezu in Abuja.
The National Emergency Management Agency, or NEMA, says about 50 people sustained burns in Saturday's tanker explosion in central Nigeria, in addition to those killed. The victims are currently receiving treatment at local hospitals. The 60,000-liter fuel tanker crashed in central Niger state near Abuja, spilling its contents. Officials say locals rushed to the scene with generators to siphon fuel from the tanker, triggering the explosion. Manzo Iziko is a spokesperson at NEMA.
A mass burial has been conducted where the people that died at the scene of the incident have been put to rest, and the injured people have also been taken to various primary and secondary medical facilities.
At least three times in recent months, tanker explosions in Nigeria have caused dozens of deaths. A similar incident to Saturday's killed 170 people in northern Jigawa state back in October. In September, another 48 died trying to scoop up fuel after a tanker collided with a truck full of cattle in Niger state. The problems start with frequent road accidents involving the tankers. According to Nigeria's Road Safety Corps, there were about 1,500 tanker accidents in 2020 alone. The Petrol Tanker Drivers Association blames the frequency of these crashes on poor road conditions and a lack of enforcement of road safety measures, including speed and load limits. When the tankers crash, locals quickly move in, hoping to take away some fuel before police arrive. Augustine Egbon is the chairman of the Petrol Tanker Drivers Association.
Myself, I'm a tanker driver. I know how it is. The roads are bad. Secondly, my advice now to everybody is that as soon as a tanker has an accident or tanker failed now, nobody should go there. Because sometimes when tanker fall, the tanker will be there. It will spend almost 2 or 3 hours. It's when people started going there, that is where we see the fire will now. So there the fire will start.
Nigeria has an aging 5,000-kilometer-long oil pipeline, but most of the 50 million liters of gasoline consumed here daily are transported by roads to pumps. Authorities have pledged to address the issue and enforce stricter regulations. The recent surge in gasoline prices, rising fivefold since President Bola Tinubu scrapped fuel subsidies in May 2023, has driven many to risk their lives to retrieve fuel during accidents. The locals often use or sell the fuel they collect from crash sites. Timfi Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
The Mundari people of South Sudan are known for their pastoral lifestyle. Advocates for the community say their distinctive practices, especially their close bond with cattle, are a vital aspect of the world's intangible cultural heritage. Unfortunately, that heritage is under significant threat from climate change, conflict, and the pressures of modernization. Sheila Pony has more from Tarakeka County in central Equatoria State.
The Mundari have coexisted with their cattle for centuries. For them, their livestock form the foundation of their economy, the core of their social structure, and a source of great pride. John Albino Lako is a Mundari elder. VOA caught up with him at one of the cattle camps where he takes us through the cultural practices of the Mundari, a small ethnic group in South Sudan, numbering between 70,000 and 100,000.
Cattles are not just part of our heritage. They are the foundation of our economy and our pride.
Albino points out that cattle have special purposes for marriages and ceremonies.
Without cattle, a man cannot marry in our community. Those without Halabi stock must cultivate crops to trade for goat or cattle. But now, few young people are staying in the camp. Many are moving to town and leave this life behind.
This change, along with the threat of climate change and conflict, has a profound effect on the Mundari traditions. Grazing lands are shrinking because of erratic weather patterns, and ongoing violence has displaced many families, leading to cultural erosion. Lado Philip Jambeke is a member of the Mundari community.
In the past, cultures were transmitted through fireplaces where children sit with their elders, sharing stories and learning happen. Today, modernization and globalization have disrupted these traditions. Without proper documentation of our cultures, dance, marriages, rituals, and social practices, our intangible heritage is at risk of being lost due to these cultural evolutions where modern cultures are trying to erode our cultures. Therefore, it could have been practices through our villages so that our next generation, the upcoming generation, should not forget our cultural heritage.
Wani Loklenge is a young Mundari who left home, says there are trade-offs for living in the capital.
If I had the choice, I would have lived in my village. It is peaceful and you can raise animals, farm and eat organic food. But in Juba, I have access to education and health care, which I had to find in the village.
Wani says it can be difficult to balance preserving ancient traditions and embracing modernity.
Modernization is changing how we live. Our dances, language, and even weddings are different in the city. But I'm trying my best to teach children where we come from.
UNESCO is calling for the preservation of the Mundari community's unique traditions. They emphasize integrating traditional practices into sustainable development initiatives. Beku Thomas is an expert in cultural heritage preservation.
Culture plays a vital role in sustainable development goals, especially by improving access to education and bridging scientific knowledge with traditional practices. And pastoralist communities like the Mundari can, for this reason, thrive. This includes teaching skills such as vaccination and regenerative grazing, which are essential for their sustainability.
Recognizing the urgency, UNESCO's South Sudan representative Julius Banda advocates documenting the Mundari traditions, from their marriage rituals to their pastoralist knowledge.
I would like to underscore the important roles, a vital role played by culture in our society, especially in sustainable development. This especially also among the pastoral.
Among those working to preserve the Mundari heritage is Madelina Genti.
Nowadays, our cultures and traditions are fading. We are no longer doing the traditional attires with the beads. Our children are not even dressing using the attires designed with the beads. But what you still have now, it is the traditional marks on our face. And this is what shows us being Mundari.
Mundari elders and activists such as Ladu Philip Jambeke hope world attention will help them pass their traditions to future generations, serving as a testament to the cultural richness of South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Sheila Oponi, in Terekeka County, Central Equatoria State, South Sudan.
There was both relief and happiness for both Israelis and Palestinians as a planned six-week ceasefire in Gaza between Israel and Hamas got underway this week. Hamas released three female hostages and Israel freed 90 Palestinian prisoners. Many Israelis credit incoming U.S. President Donald Trump with achieving the deal. Linda Gradstein has this report for VOA from Tel Aviv, Israel.
It felt like the entire country of Israel was holding its breath as it waited to see if Hamas would honor the ceasefire deal and release the three women. Thousands of Israelis went to Hostage Square, where there have been weekly demonstrations for the release of all remaining 97 hostages, although at least one-third of them are dead. The three women were able to walk, and the Red Cross said they were in good condition. Social media published images of Emily Damari reuniting with her mother with a white bandage on her hand. Her family said she had lost two fingers when she was shot by Hamas after she was kidnapped on October 7, 2023, during the militants' raid on southern Israel. The women will spend several days in the hospital. Israeli Army spokesman Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari said bringing home the hostages has long been a goal.
Since the October 7th massacre, our mission has been clear. Bring home all the hostages held by Hamas in Gaza. Today, as part of these ongoing efforts, we welcomed home three hostages, three young women, after 471 days in Hamas captivity.
Israel released 90 Palestinian women and minors in exchange for the three women. In Gaza, residents celebrated the ceasefire as humanitarian aid began to flow into the enclave. Thousands streamed back to northern Gaza, which they had been forced to leave as Israel attacked the area. Hundreds of thousands had been living in tents in southern Gaza, but human rights groups say more than 90% of the buildings in Gaza have been damaged or destroyed. Sunday marked the first hostage release since November 2023. One of the hostages freed then, Amit Susana, thanked the U.S. government for its help in reaching this deal.
We would like to express our deepest gratitude to President Joe Biden, his administration, and the elected President Donald Trump for their tireless efforts in securing a deal for the release of our hostages. Your leadership and commitment have been instrumental in reaching this crucial step. However, we urge you to continue your efforts in ensuring the completion of the second phase of the deal.
The first phase of the deal, which began Sunday, is set to last for 42 days. A total of 33 hostages, most of them alive, will be freed in exchange for hundreds of Palestinian prisoners. Starting on day 16, Israel and Hamas are set to begin negotiations on a permanent ceasefire and an alternative government in Gaza. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
And that wraps it up for us this Tuesday. We invite you to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you somehow miss this broadcast, just head on over to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. We now leave you with the song Sura Yako by Saudi Soul. Been listening to Saudi Soul by Sura Yako. I am your host, Carol Van Devin, Washington. And on behalf of our engineer, Pete Hundley, and producer, Kwame Afori, thanks for tuning in. We'll talk with you again tomorrow evening on another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.